Support for Science Friday comes from Lumosity. Lumosity.com's daily workouts are designed to improve memory and attention and dedicated to helping people feel sharper, think faster, and remember more. It's all at Lumosity.com.
This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Do you find yourself wandering through the produce aisles of the grocery store and you just feel sort of uninspired, right? The same old romaine, factory-farmed carrots, hothouse tomatoes, they're perfect-looking and tasteless. Well, here's a way to add some pizzazz to your salad. Why not take a hike and gather some wild spring greens along the way? My next guest does just that as a professional forager. Maybe you've even sampled her harvest on tables here in New York City restaurants. She's here with tips on foraging safely and sustainably. And yes, you can fail when foraging if you pick the wrong plants. There are poisonous plants out there to be aware of. Don't harvest in the wrong spots. It's another episode of our Food Failures series. Let me introduce my guest. Tama Matsuaka Wong is a forager and the author of Foraged Flavor, Finding Fabulous Ingredients in Your Backyard or Farmer's Market. Welcome back to Science Friday.
Thank you. Thank you. It's great to be here.
I see you brought a few things with you today. What have you got?
Of course.
What have you got to show us today?
Okay. So, do you want me to start with the most strange looking one?
We love strange.
Okay, so start with strange. So
what is
this?
That?
I don't even know how you would describe
it. I would describe it as part. What do you call it?
It's kind of
asparagus-like looking.
But almost bamboo-looking in a way. So this is actually an invasive plant that people can find pretty much all over.
Wow.
But it originally came from Japan, and it's called Japanese knotweed. And right now, at this time of the year, is a time when it's really good. You can actually, use the stems, and it tastes kind of rhubarby. It's
wow.
A great taste, kind of like rhubarby, and when it's younger, asparagusy.
Did it come from Japan on a ship sometime and find its way over?
A lot of these invasive plants came over and they move around with people. So there, it's ensconced here and in Europe, or all around the world now.
Wow. Our number. You can call in. I got to find our number here. 844 SciTalk, if you'd like to call us in, or you can tweet us at SciFry, SCIFRI. So that was an invasive species in Japan that made it over here.
Yeah, it's not invasive in Japan. It just became invasive
here
because it doesn't have the same types of controls.
I see. So you're doing us a favor if you go out and forage.
Yes, I think the U.S. government spends billions of dollars a year getting rid of invasive plants.
Right. All right. Now you've got another plant.
Okay, so another invasive plant. Which probably, if you have a backyard or a garden or if you're a farmer, you already know and don't like it. It's called garlic mustard.
Garlic mustard.
Yes.
I see that everywhere.
Yeah,
I didn't know that it was. Is that a real mustard plant?
It's in the brassica family, right? So it is kind of related to the cabbages and broccoli we see. But it's amazing. And if you take these tender tips at the top, you can eat it raw like this, or it makes a fantastic pesto.
No kidding.
Yeah.
You mean instead of the basil leaves, you use that?
Yeah, exactly. Why not use this?
I have so much of that. I have so much of that going in the woods around me, that I could easily harvest a bunch of pesto.
Pesto's great because you can make up a whole batch. You can freeze it.
And it's got little white flowers now. Is this time of the year it's blooming?
Yes, it's flowering. And
it's
when
flowering?
It shoots up and see how it's kind of lime green?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the key is when it's a peak time, like anything you see in the supermarket. What's the peak time that tastes delicious?
And this is the time now.
Yeah,
Will it be there all summertime?
No.
No.
Now is the best for this.
Okay. Now I see you have another.
Yes, which this
more familiar looking.
Yes. Anyone could recognize this, and I did get this from my backyard.
You did.
Which is not sprayed or
no.
anything. Is dandelion flowers.
Dandelion flowers.
And these are really, the French know it quite well because they actually are used to making a jelly or a marmalade out of it. And it has a honey-like taste.
Right.
And if you leave these the petals in it, it gives us also a really nice texture. But for myself, our favorite is to make it like a tempura. Like it's kind of like a Japanese fritter.
Right.
Because it tastes really puffy and sweet. and you have it with kind of a savory sauce. It's really good.
So you're not using the leaves like we always hear, make wine out of the leaves and things?
I do use the leaves when they're younger.
When they're young.
So if you find some leaves that are young, and again, this light green color and it sticks up in the middle, they're not going to be bitter, and we have some good recipes online for them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we do have, if you go to our website, you can find recipes online at sciencefriday.com/forage. And they're up. Now, there are dangers to foraging.
Yes.
Tell us about some of the do's and the don'ts of foraging.
Well, I think that, you know, you have to start with identifying the plant properly.
Right.
And but there's a lot of places you can go to identify it. On our website, meadowsandmore.com, we actually have a plant ID forum where you can post photos. And we have one of the best field botanists this side of the Mississippi who will answer.
No kidding.
He's retired. He loves to do this. But there's also other plant forums and things that you can find information from. I think, though, the second thing is to make sure it's all about the land. So where you're picking from, that you're not picking from the side of the highway. You're not picking in a place that has had heavy industrial use.
Oh, that's right, because there could be lead in this or mercury in the soil.
Or that hasn't been sprayed. And that kind of leads to why I feel like you should always get permission, because then you'll know exactly what the use is, besides it being, call me old-fashioned, but I feel like you should ask somebody before you go pick something.
Yeah, if it's an old battery factory, you don't want to.
Yes, and then that also leads to another thing, which is about the water.
Mm.
So, you know, a lot of times we walk along and we see the water. It looks completely clear. We don't see anything in it. But I work a lot with people that do a restoration work, and they do water testing. So they basically said that you have to be very careful in this whole, definitely in a metropolitan area, which includes like hundreds of miles out and definitely east of the Mississippi, that the water actually contains things. You should not be drinking water in creeks, and you should not be harvesting plants such as wild watercress from a creek or a place that water comes in a lot.
Because?
There is a fluke that is a parasite that particularly likes to go inside the stem of the watercress. And it's a fluke that goes into your liver, and you don't notice anything right away, but it can have a debilitating effect over time, yes.
I hate when that happens.
So
it lives in the wild watercress. Is it easy to recognize wild watercress out there?
I think a lot of people, I mean, you see it's quite kind of popular for people to be getting it. And I think the main thing is if you are going to purchase it, then make sure that you've boiled it quite thoroughly.
Yeah, you want to kill that fluke.
Yes.
It's in there. Well, any other plants that are common that we should be aware of?
I think the other thing, at least that I follow, I have a sustainability code. I mean, obviously, because I'm doing this commercially, so I feel that it's not like you're just going and picking one or two things for yourself. So one of the things is to be very careful about what they call spring ephemerals. They're kind of native plants that are very connected with the ecology. And property managers and parks, et cetera, they spend a lot of time trying to preserve these things. And one of the things that is one of these special plants is the ramp, which people know and are crazy about, and there's kind of an obsession with them.
Right.
So I think that right now there's studies coming out last year that said that they estimate that about 2 million ramps are being harvested every year. At least that's the only ones they can tell.
So they're going to be gone if they keep going.
I think that's a concern. And the main thing I would say if people really want to have some is to clip off the top. Because if you just think about it, if you take the entire plant out with the bulb, pull out the whole plant. It doesn't just grow from nothing.
All right, let's go to the phones. Let's go right to New York, right here in New York. Seth in New York. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, how are you?
Hi there. Go ahead.
So I'm calling about Japanese knotweed. I have a in the valley, and I have the Japanese knotweed ever increasing. It's a real problem. But I love the idea of eating it instead of trying to keep it under control any other ways. I've pulled the little shoots, and I've actually tried to eat them before because they're supposed to be really good for you with resveratrol.
Mm-hmm.
But they've never been that good. So do you have like a specific way that you would cook them, or what do I do with them exactly?
Yes. So I actually don't think it tastes that good raw either. So first you want to pick it when it's not woody, right? When it's still kind of pliable. And then one of the things, that is fantastic, is to substitute it for something you're going to use rhubarb in.
Oh.
So one of the things that we have a recipe for is a rhubarb strawberry crumble. And you can make a jam with ginger or other herbs in it, or Japanese actually like to stir fry it. You kind of chop it up so it's kind of like little pretty circles, you know, the crosswise, and they stir fry it with pork and other types of things.
Mm-hmm. Does that work for you, Seth?
Yeah. So with sugar and stuff like that, make kind of a jelly with it.
Yeah, you can do that too. Yes, ginger goes well with ginger.
Yeah, interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you watch it grow, it came over as an ornamental from the Victorian brought it over originally, and it's really beautiful when it blooms.
Right.
But it's really something. When you watch it grow, the entire stalk has these little shoots that come out, and if like a millimeter of those things breaks off, it can spread a whole new plant.
So totally, yes.
I hope that's a good thing.
So eating it is definitely better than mowing it down. So I like that.
Or bringing in the goats to eat them. The book we're talking about is Foraged Flavor, Finding Fabulous Ingredients in Your Backyard or Farmer's Market. If you run a restaurant, people are going to come to you and mm-hmm. offer you freshly grown foods, forage type. Should you be aware of who's coming to the back door and trying to sell you this stuff? Do you really need to know the person or the source of where this stuff is coming from?
For me, I think so, definitely, because foraging is very new. So mm-hmm. I don't think there's been much of a history of practices such as there is with a farm or cultivated vegetables. So I think you really need to be very careful about, you know, asking and understanding the practices. Maybe go to some of the places, make sure they're getting permission, find out if they follow a sustainability code. I think it's very, very important. Obviously, if you're a restaurant and serving the public, it's even more important than just, you know, your risks you take for yourself.
So I guess the best way to do this, if you want to experiment, is if you don't know where to go, try your own backyard.
Yes,
first, right?
Dandelion flowers should be in there as long as you're not spraying.
Oh, there's no shortage of dandelion.
Right, it's out now.
Is anything you can do with the root? Because all the dandelions have those deep roots? Or is it just...
Well, some people say that you can make coffee. Like it makes this coffee-like. And I have sort of tried that, but I have these different categories. And for me, it's a little bit like... might be nice, but a little too much trouble.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. I used to pull those. Remember those long tools you used to pull the roots with? I noticed that you brought your plants in Ziploc bags. Is that the best way to store the
for greens, yes, for because greens. You want to make sure it doesn't dry out and it retains the moisture. So whenever I'm in the field, I usually have, especially if it's warm, I have a cooler or something that keeps it cool. And so I pop it right from the bag into the cooler.
Oh, that's a good idea. Let's go to the phones. This time, let's go to Winchester, Virginia. Hi, Dean. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to make sure that purslane, P-U-R-S-L-A-N-E, doesn't get neglected. It's a scrubby little weed that grows out of the cracks of sidewalks everywhere. But it's got a very high concentration of omega-3 fatty acids, which are healthy for our hearts. And it doesn't have a lot of flavor, but you can mince it finely along with some oregano, sprinkle it on a little feta cheese, dribble some olive oil over it. Makes a great little appetizer.
Definitely agree with you. Top 10, I would say.
Yeah. And it grows in the cracks in the dry
and it's,
sidewalk?
It's one of these, you know, if you have a drought in your area of the country, try and get some purslane in there.
You know what I have in my lawn also that I discovered over the years is, you know what's coming up now is the wild onions.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
You know,
yes.
I cut them off like chives.
I just went to an event and they had wild onion stuffed dumplings.
Wow.
It was really good.
Wow. Wow, I'm getting hungry. Well, we're talking about food foraging this hour on Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. I'm Ira Flato talking with Tama Matsuoka Wong. And what other hints? Other hints you can give us? We've got a couple of minutes left. What other suggestions might you make?
I think that, you know, there's a lot. It's definitely something that chefs have become really interested in. So next time you go to a restaurant, you know, ask them for some of their foraged things on the menu and try it that way. And then you can kind of decide how you like it, see how it looks. It's a good way to kind of get used to it. The other thing is if you're worried about identification, which some people always
yeah.
will,
yeah.
Some of the plants in my book are actually garden-worthy native plants, and you can plant them, have a label on it, and eat from them, like mm-hmm. an edible garden.
You just planted a sumac?
Oh,
sumac farm?
Yes.
My spies tell me, is that right?
Yes, so I'm starting to evolve that there are certain things. I just mentioned about the purslane being top 10. So there's some things you just can't get enough of.
Sumac.
And one of them is sumac.
Because it's such a wild plant, isn't it?
It grows quite profusely, although it does seem to be less around than I thought it was. But people cut it down because they think it's poison sumac.
Call it a junk tree in a lot of different places.
Or they think it's the poison sumac. The poison sumac has a white fruit cluster.
Right.
And this has a kind of beautiful red fruit cluster. So you just couldn't misidentify it.
And so how do you prepare it?
Well, one of the things I like about it, I mean, you can just dunk the cluster in water and make a sumacade out of it. But for myself, I like to be able to preserve the flavor by making it into a spice.
Hmm.
And sumac spice now is really hot.
Speaking of making an aid, are there any wild teas? Are there teas around that you can find?
I don't know. I think that would be part of more exploration.
More exploration is finding teas. And as I said before, be careful. And as you said, be careful where you go. Make sure you get permission,
mm-hmm.
and you know where what was growing on that plot of land. Mm-hmm. Just don't go out to a wild field and say, I'm going to just start picking stuff from here.
Conservation groups do spray, and they spray invasive. So you have to be really careful about where you're going.
What's the most surprising thing? You've been doing this for quite a while. What's the most surprising thing about picking wild vegetables?
Well, first it's just always something to explore, and there's always something new. Every year is different. But just some of the things that I'm collaborating with different chefs and different people,
right.
and some of the things that people come up with. So one of the ones was the shagbark hickory bark ice cream.
Hickory bark ice
yes.
cream. Are Ben and Jerry's listening?
You can go get it at Gramercy Tavern, actually.
Is that
yes.
right?
Because I just, you take off a hunk of bark, and it just is like a house shingle.
Right.
It's like, okay, I sure. know that the Indians used to use this, but like, what the heck, right?
Right,
But it's after you toast it, it gets smoky, and then after you infuse milk and slow cook it a little bit, it gets caramelly. So it's got this amazing flavor, and it's supposed to be very healthy too.
Hickory and
shagbark hickory bark.
Is it easy to find the shagbark?
Yeah,
hickory
very
bark?
Easy. And again, you're not hurting the tree because it's actually like a shaggy bark. It exfoliates, so you're not cutting into the tree to take the bark.
Wow, and if it's got moss on it, stay away from it. Take it right off. I guess you can make ice cream. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much. This is fascinating.
It's great to see you finally.
Great to see you. Good to see you also. Taba Matsuoka Wong is a forager. She's author of Foraged Flavor, Finding Fabulous Ingredients in Your Backyard or a Farmer's Market. This book's available at Amazon everywhere you want to get it. Thanks again.
Thank you.
We're going to go out foraging in the backyard this weekend.